Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryankaravavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 93. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Sukadeva Goswami immediately replied that transgressions of religious principles by the Supreme Controller testify to his great power. For example, fire can consume any abominable thing. That is the manifestation of the supremacy of fire. Similarly, the sun can absorb water from a urinal or from stool, and the sun is not polluted. Rather, due to the influence of the sunshine, the polluted, contaminated place becomes disinfected and sterilized. One may argue that, therefore, by Krishna's involvement, Krishna's influence, then everything becomes purified, not that he becomes contaminated by it.
We have to accept the premise that Krishna is God to offer such arguments.
And so we're reading 10th canto.
Us, yes.
Yes.
Because I was always surprised when Srila Prabhupada gives such arguments. Because usually you expect something more of a scientific thing.
But that's what the other cantos are for. See, in other words, the scientific element, what we see is, you see science from Pranamoy on. But where it's just the science is the main focus, that's the atheistic position of Pranamoy. So it's only when you get to the next level of Dharma, then you accept that position, that performance of duty, that gives the good result and everything. Does that make sense? So, and then you're dealing with a different science. So this is science, but this is the science of what God is, not that we're using logic as the main thing. That's for those who don't accept authority, don't accept duties, don't accept those things. In other words, whatever is made up by the local people and they accept, for those people, then you have to make it sound, reasonable in their mind. But those who accept authority and accept the principles of religion, then you can start talking from there. Right? Because there's transcendental to that. Because above that, then there are those who are skeptic that by following all these religious duties and engaging the senses that you'll actually be happy. So they're skeptical about that. And so that brings them to that next level of consciousness because they understand the soul is actually what you're dealing with. And the soul is being engaged through the physical activities, mental activities. But the actual point is the soul is only satisfied when we don't engage in those activities. Right? So now here comes the problem. Right? Is that by engaging the senses, that's a natural position. But unfortunately, engaging the senses in the material platform is foolish, and we don't get a good result. Right? But it's natural, but it's foolish. We're in a foolish position. Then for those who are skeptical of this process, then they're intelligent, but their non-engagement of the senses, that's not natural. Right? Because the soul being a living entity being active, then naturally there's going to be activities performed. So they put themselves in an unnatural position, though they're intelligent enough to understand that material engagement of the senses doesn't give happiness. It only gives difficulty. So, and the soul in approaching either of these is looking for an eternal position of happiness. Right? And so then we see on both of these, they're temporary. One's a longer temporary, one's a shorter temporary. Right? So then only devotional service means we're engaging the senses, that's natural, but we're intelligent that we're not engaging the senses in material activities. So that way then you get the proper benefit of both the intelligence and the natural position of the living entity. That's why Prabhupada then says that devotional service is natural, it's not an imposition on the mind. It's actually the natural position, because you're dealing with transcendental, which is the nature of the soul, and you're engaging the senses, which is natural as an individual, as a person. Right? But you're not engaging in material activities. So that ability to discern that's where the intelligence lies. So that's Buddhi Yoga. Right? So this is a science. It's just that now we're dealing with the Vedic science rather than just dealing that we make it sound logical for those who don't. That's what Bhagavad Gita is for. So the Bhagavad Gita is for establishing that understanding in those who don't have faith in God, or the Vedic literatures and that. And even if they do, to understand the proper way. So that level's there. And then that comes through, then you get the same science in a more technical way, you know, in the first, you know, especially second canto, third canto, like that. But then as it progresses up, then you see it's more established in appreciating the Vedic process. And so then when we get to this point, then we're seeing Krishna as Bhagavan, not just as Paramatma. And so then we have to understand his position. So the reason that when we engage our senses and we're, you know, on the material platform, is we're engaging the senses, but the senses and the power of the senses coming from Krishna, that we're not including him in the process, then how he's going to be satisfied, right? Because then being part and parcel of him, if he's not satisfied, we actually can't be satisfied. But if we engage accordingly so that he is, then we're satisfied. He's satisfied, we're satisfied. So then the explanation is going to be on the platform of the actual principles of devotional service, the science that's given in the Vedas. Does that make sense? And that other process, it can be worked if you find that someone in the audience doesn't have that mentality, then you use that. But if you're dealing with devotees, then ideally we should be able to just work on the position of Krishna and his position. You know, how he's the Ishwara, he's the Lord of all Shaktis, he is Rasa. These three principles. So, yeah. Yes.
So we see here that Krishna is always enjoying, and his devotees also enjoying with him. It's Vikalamba, Sambhog, you know, the five main rasa. It's all blissful. However, for some of us, the material enjoyment is spoiled by philosophy. We can't really enjoy because we know he isn't there. But we didn't come to that level of spiritual enjoyment. So that position in between, that's why we see devotees with long faces. And it's a long time.
Okay. So you're suggesting that, you know, how you say, we bring, let's say, a deity of Krishna, drop it on their head to make their faces shorter or something?
Prabhupada said, chant and be happy, but practically some people chant and they are happy, but some people chant and they are not happy.
But they're supposed to be happy.
But they're not.
Yes, but are they endeavoring to be happy?
Yeah, sincerely.
But what kind of happy?
Any kind.
But that's the problem. It has to be a little bit more exclusive. Yeah. The philosophy doesn't ruin, the philosophy just lets you know what's there. So if we're finding no taste in the material, that's because we never had any taste in the material. We're only becoming aware of what's actually there. See, there's an illusion that you can enjoy. So there's an inspiration, but we don't actually hear of anybody actually enjoying. You know, as I think it was one wealthy person pointed out, the happiness they have at being wealthy is is everybody else's, you know, how you say, respect for them, that they must be so happy. You know, and that way they're superior. You know, they drive up in the car, they got the thing, everyone thinks, wow. They're not happy. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter what you're wearing and what you're driving. Point is, if you're not happy, you're not happy. But because they think that they are, then that isn't a happiness for them. You know, at least, you know, getting out of the car, handing the keys over, walking up the steps, you know, like that, that part's good. But once you get inside and then there's all the other guys that, oh, this guy this and that guy that, then it's back to normal. You know, so all it is the philosophy makes us aware of what the actual position is. It's not that it removes our happiness. There wasn't any there anyway. It's just we become aware of that. And so then being aware of that, then we see his happiness is actually in connection with Krishna. And so then being in connection with Krishna, then we try to therefore try to see whatever we're doing in connection with him. And then associate with those devotees that we're comfortable with, we like being with. And like that. Then, and life goes on. You know? You know, that means there's not sayings, and it means younger people. That's one thing, but once they get up, you know, 30s or like this, then aren't there sayings? People, you know, people ask how you're doing, and yeah, life goes on, or you know, things like that. I don't know the best ones, the Bengali, you know, cholche, you know, it's going on, you know, it's a, you know, like that, or. I say, Jaya Dwaita Maharaj is, you know, how are you feeling? You know, or like this, or how, you know, how are you doing? He said, fair to mildly cloudy. You know, so like that. So that's what it, you know, pulling on, you know, like that. Yeah, we get by, or so that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur has made the point is that you can't enjoy in the material world. It's only misery. But we've accepted a compromise that if I'm not actually, the miseries has been solved for a moment, or at least it's reduced, I'll call that happiness. Like that. So all it is the philosophy makes you aware of actually that's what you're working with. Because when you know what you're working with, and they're about this far away from each other, right? But you can imagine if they take up, you know, I mean, they take up preaching, they'll be good, right? You know, because they can speak to a whole hall, right? You know. And you can see is the superiority of the multitasking abilities of the village people, is that how they can be talking and listening at the same time, because they're both talking at the same time. You know, like that, so, you know, it's just... Yeah, if it gets too hot, then they stop talking. It gets too cold, they stop talking. But when in between, then... Yeah. So, then we're aware that actually what I'm looking for is in a different... It's not how I'm going about it. Just like you can't solve a disease if you don't accept that you have one. Like, can you correct the small boy's cold? Because in his mind, he's fine. No, you have to put on your jacket, you have to put on your hat. No, I don't need that. We're playing, I'm fine. Right? He's coughing, mucus coming out of his nose, this, that, sneezing. But to him, he's perfectly fine. You know what I'm saying? So once he becomes aware that, you know, he's got a cult, then you can get him to do the appropriate action. Because the actual solution may not be exactly what you like. It means, like, you got to put your jacket on, you know, put your hat on. So it's just that when we see that, so therefore, that's the beauty of Krishna consciousness, that the senses aren't any less engaged. It's just where you engage them. That's the mistake of the impersonalists, is they think to not engage the senses will solve the problem. but that won't be satisfying to the soul. So the senses need to be engaged, but if they're engaged in material activity, that can't satisfy. So they have to be engaged in spiritual activity. So that's the importance of the culture. Because the culture is the art where you apply the senses. You know, so the nice, you know, the cooking is there, the nice arrangements, nice conversation, nice dealings, the regulated lifestyle that you have times for everything, and all these different things come in. Does that make sense? So that's where it comes in. But we accept the philosophy. We may come from a background that has some culture or not. Then we don't accept the standard, how you say, devotional culture. For us, it's a devotional culture. It's using the formula, the Vedic culture. And so then we end up with philosophy and no culture. So then that makes for speculation. And so then, you know, if we can get a taste out of speculation, then we'll do a little better. but the reality is that if we accept the culture and those dealings and all that, then it's nice. Does that make sense? So that's why all of that's presented together. Does that make sense? But we have a tendency to engagement of the senses is maya, so actually we can't, if we're happy, then it can't be Krishna conscious.
Sometimes it's true.
Means that we think like that.
No, because when we are happy for material stuff. There's a tinge of Krishna consciousness.
That's there, but then that solves that one problem Prabhu was talking about, is that you have they can't enjoy on any level. They can't enjoy spiritually or materially.
That's for a long term.
Oh, the moment when they pull up the chair from the pond, you get that breath of air. So. Yeah, so it's just those aspects, that association. That's why then we choose those who are swajati, that have that same kind of nature. So then they can appreciate doing things and being Krishna conscious and engaging in activities of Krishna consciousness in a similar way. So it goes more naturally. Like that. But if every time you have to worry about every word, every this, every, you know. What is it? Like Brahma Samhita says, every word is a trip. You know, every song is, you know, yeah. Like
every
this.
Step is a mine.
Yeah, every step is a landmine, yeah.
Every step is a dance.
Hmm?
Every step is a dance.
Yeah, no, but we're talking about material. You know, we're not talking about your life in Calcutta temple. You know, we're talking about outside the. Yeah. Is that?
Yeah. Maharaj, similar to Prabhu's question, it still looks that the process is very long.
That long means, compared to what?
Compared to means whatever lifespan we have.
Okay. Now, just you're from where?
Calcutta, basically, and right now Kanpur.
Calcutta. Okay. And then, okay. Now let us say, in Calcutta, you have a nicely established, aristocratic Bengali gentleman. What age is he? Where he's really established, business is really good, he's socially accepted. What age is he?
60, 70.
Yeah. So, how old are you?
I'm 32.
Okay. So, you have another 40 years before you can say it's a long time. Because do any of those guys in Calcutta say it's a long time? No. That's just standard. That's what it takes.
The question was, Maharaj, just like we hear about the pastimes of Krishna, the Gopas, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, so within ISKCON or within community, if you start seeing Vaishnavas a certain area or certain place exhibiting those pastimes, then we get an inspiration, we go on and become like them. But when we see that nobody is becoming like them, or there are few but we are not seeing able to see them, or whatever the reason, then the process looks, you know, even if you go, still you are not able to achieve. And those who have after 70, only few are able to achieve.
Yeah, but that's what it is in Calcutta, isn't it? Right?
Huh.
And everybody works very hard for that, so... Uh-huh. that helping, so why wouldn't you be willing to work equally hard in Krishna consciousness? So it's just, you know, material, I'll work really hard, right? But, you know, I'll study, you know, 10 hours a day or 12 hours a day for 4 years. I'll get my degrees. I'll go out there. I'll put in 12-hour days. I'll do all that. But in Krishna consciousness, no, it just should be, I can sit back and I'll just be Krishna conscious. I'll get my 3 meals a day, and I don't have to do anything. So how is that making an appropriate endeavor? Do you understand? So the point is, as Prabhupada said, we should minimum be willing to work as hard as the karmis. So, are we?
I think he sounds American style.
Oh, okay.
Getting the same results. We are getting the same results.
Yes. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is if we're talking about material, we're working hard, but we think spiritual means doing nothing. But that's from the impersonal point of view. Because we think working, that's material. So not working, that's spiritual. No. Working for ourselves or for the senses or like that, that's material. Working for Krishna, that's spiritual. So if we accept that, then why does there need to be a time frame? Right? Soul's eternal. Right? Krishna's eternal, spiritual world's eternal. We've been in the material world practically eternally. So, one lifetime, what's the big deal? Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have to look at the picture a little bigger. Because we're willing to do it materially, so why aren't we willing to do that spiritually? And we're talking about eternal rewards as opposed to finally, by the time you're 60, 70, then, you know, you're in a respectable position, and then another 10, 20 years, and you're dead. You know, so, you know, you're going to work for 50 years to get, you know, 10 to 20 years of, you know, things are working nicely. So we're talking about put in that same time and get an eternal result. So a lot better. You know, so instead of looking, oh, it takes so much time, look at what benefit you get. Right? So if I'm going to get eternal benefit, then why are we looking at it as so long? Does that work? Okay. You have something or no? Okay. One may also argue that since Krishna is the supreme authority, his activity should be followed. In answer to this argument, Sukadeva Goswami has very clearly said that the Ishwara, or supreme controller, may sometimes violate his own instructions, but this is possible only for the controller himself, not for the followers. Unusual and uncommon activities by the controller can never be imitated. Sukadeva Goswami warned that the conditioned followers, who are not actually in control, should never even imagine imitating the uncommon activities of the controller. Because we'll only also pick and choose certain ones. We're not going to take that, you know, he has to sit into everybody's heart, you know, while they sit there and be stupid and, you know, like that, drool at the mouth when they sleep or sing stupid songs while they're in the shower and all that kind of stuff like that. But Krishna's there, so he's doing that. So are we willing to do that? You know, he's in every atom, in between every atom, you know, so we're not willing to do that. We only pick those things that we think we will enjoy. And we'll only point those out. Not that he maintains the whole universe and all that. You know, start with that. You know, take your money, go out and maintain the whole universe. And if you can do that, okay, then we'll talk about these other things like that. But since we're not doing that, then why are we only talking about that he's going to, you know. You know. And anyway, they're not good at playing the flute. They're not out in the forest, you know, so. Sukadeva Goswami continued, "One who is not a great controller should never imitate the behavior of ruling personalities, even mentally. If out of foolishness an ordinary person does imitate such behavior, he will simply destroy himself, just as a person who is not Rudra would destroy himself if he tried to drink an ocean of poison. The statements of the Lord's empowered servants are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary when consistent with those statements." Therefore, one who is intelligent should carry out their instructions. Right? The statements of the Lord's empowered servants are always true, and the acts they perform are exemplary when consistent with those statements. Right? So that's how you judge, is that what they're saying is in line with what is Krishna, what the guru, the saintly persons, the guru, they're speaking according to scriptures, and then the activities that are in line with that, then that's what we should do. Right? Does that make sense? So their instructions and us following those instructions in line with that statement, that's what we should be doing. If they're doing things that aren't in line with that statement, that's the ones we're not supposed to follow. Because if we follow that, that's called imitation. But the things that they're doing and they say that you should do, those are the things we should do. Footnote 34. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 29 to 31 to Bhaga Arkamrichimala chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So just the we can see is that whatever position Krishna's on, then there's that element of that relationship with the devotees and his position of interaction with the devotees. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. One may object, then in what circumstances should the rule that whatever the great man does, others should follow, apply? Bhagavad Gita 3:21. The instructions of the devas or great personalities are always auspicious for the devotees to follow. When the Lord performs pastimes as Rama, one should follow his instructions. One should perform only those acts which do not contradict the orders given by the devas or great personalities. But even those instructions should be approved by scriptures. Then one can act, otherwise not. The intelligent person will conduct himself in this way. So he sees scripture is giving a recommendation, the acharyas are giving a recommendation based on that. So those are the activities that we should perform. That's the aspect. Does this make sense? Yes.
This is also one of the points, is that in India, Rama is much more popular than Krishna, because it's easy to relate.
Yes, because that's the taste, following all the rules.
But as Krishna, it's too controversial.
But that's about reciprocating with the devotees based on their affection, not bound by the rules. You know, it's just like, let us say, the high court judge is at court, and everyone deals with him very nicely, everyone does everything very properly and everything very perfectly, and respects him for his position, you know, whatever he says, you know, it happens, you know, and all that. So that's going to have a taste, but it won't have as much taste as then when he's at home with the family and friends and things go on and they actually don't care that he's the high court judge. That would give more taste. So that's the whole point, is that, yes, that is there, and that's an important aspect in taste, but then there's above that. That aspect of Bhagavan and sweetness as a person, rather than he's Bhagavan and he's God. So therefore that position. So they're respecting that position, the person in that position. But here it's just about the person. We're not worried about position. So in other words, the affection for the person is so great that it doesn't need any other qualifications. Right? That's the difference between rag and vaidhi. Vaidhi means, rag means is that there's a spontaneous attraction without the, involvement of the intelligence. That's how rag is defined. Right? When we have to intellectualize on it, that means then it's vaidhi. If there's a natural spontaneous, that's rag. Unfortunately, we just have that rag for material things. So, therefore, we start on the path of vaidhi. And then from doing these things, doing what's dutiful and all that, appreciating Krishna's position, then gradually as the heart becomes purified, then one can develop that natural spontaneous attraction for him. It's not based on that he's God, he's great, he's this, he's that. It's just that he's nice, that's all. So what one has to see is there's different flavors, and so that's why Ayodhya is there for those kind of devotees. Right? They like the structure that you see in Vaikuntha, but they are comfortable with a little bit more close or more intimate kind of interaction. You know, a broader range of relationships. Right? Because friendship and parental is not there in Vaikuntha. Right? And so then that's all right because of his greatness like that. And that he has many wives, all the different Shaktis, you know, Sri, Bhu, Nila, and like this. Then they don't have a problem, you know, because of his greatness. Then as you add in these others, then it takes on that other flavors. And so then, like you said, up to that, they can accept in the conjugal, up to one. But then if they can accept beyond that, then you can deal with Dwarka where things aren't, he's not as prominent. You know, in Ayodhya, he's the supreme, he is the top, though he's being dutiful. And so there's this mix, but that part is main. Then you see in Dwarka that then it has other elements where others, more elements can be superior to him. Ugrasen is the king, not him. You know, it's not, we're expecting at the end of the day he'll be the king and that's the end of the story, you know, like that. So he has 16,108 wives, right? But, you know, it's still up to there. But then when we can take it farther, then we can appreciate the Brajabasis where it's not at all about the structure, it's not all about those things. Just that sweetness is the predominance. Because in the other realms there's sweetness, but it's not the predominance. It's sweetness within that. It means there are rules and regulations and the sweetness that comes from that, rather than just sweetness.
When those previous verses are in Prayojana and not in Sambandha?
Because it's about the position of Krishna and the taste that is being experienced in that position. Because there'll be the same points being made in another context that will all be in Sambandha, showing how he's the Ishwara, how he's the Lord of his potencies, how he's the Lord of Rasa.
So the emphasis.
Yes, the emphasis here is just he, therefore, in his interaction with the devotees, because what we were talking about, his interaction with the gopis. So that platform, that's the sweetness of rasa. We're just looking at the position of him, that he's there, but it's that because we're only reaffirming the positions that we've already established in the previous cantos. But we're just showing it within this context. Is that what it says? Yeah. Right, so that's the whole thing. So he's saying, and the intelligent person will conduct himself in this way. It's according to Shastra, it's according to the authority of the Acharyas. That's what we follow. Right? We're not judging that, no, we have to do what they do. Because then what will we choose? Okay, you know, Prabhupada is there, you know, he says things, people do it, I like that position, you know, that they bring him a very big, you know, nice plate of varieties of, you know, items for lunch, I like that one. What about the sleeping only 3 hours, maybe 4 hours a day, getting up early, writing books, you know, dealing with mail and all that. He would, I think, was like 90 letters a month he would write. And these are the kind of, not the modern ones where you just type something out and then just push send. This is you write it, you let it sit, you know, then you reread it, then rewrite it until you get all the words just right and all that. Then it's sent by mail, right? Does that make sense? So you do 90 of those a month. So it's basically 3 a day. So, you know, what about that part? What about the responsibility? What about, you know what I'm saying? So that's the thing is, we'll just take the parts we like. But if you want to take, oh no, but we have to follow the example, then take the whole thing. Otherwise, just take the instructions, apply them into your position, and be happy. So... Sukadeva Goswami continued, "My dear Prabhu, when these great persons who are free from false ego act piously in this world, they have no selfish motives to fulfill. And even when they act in apparent contradiction to the laws of piety, they are not subject to sinful reactions." Right? Because the whole point is that what's the problem with sin?
Makes us forget Krishna.
The impressions of the sin, it continues forever.
Okay, and what's the problem with that? Because we're looking for eternal, right?
Yeah, eternal is sinking down.
But it's eternal, so what's the problem with sinking down?
Distraction from Krishna.
Or distraction from Krishna, right? So then it being a distraction, so therefore the piety, its value is its usefulness in Krishna's service. So therefore, piety is the only thing that gives benefit. Impiety doesn't give benefit, right? So if one is involved in piety, one is progressing. If one involves in impiety, that will stop the progression while you're involved in impiety. But as soon as you start piety again, then it can the piety moves one forward. Therefore, when these great personalities, they're following all these things nicely, then they're moving forward, they're developing, or they're in their position, or whatever it is that they're doing nicely. But when they do something impious, that doesn't negate all the piety that's there, because they're two different paths. Right? It means the result of impiety is not subjected to the results of piety. They're two separate things. Does that make sense? It's like, I cook a really nice meal. I make a total mess of the kitchen. Does the more I make a mess in the kitchen mean that the food I cook cannot taste good? No, it has nothing to do with each other. You understand? So that's the thing, is we relate that impiety is the major thing, and that overcomes everything. You know, it's like the elves of darkness, that they can come in and just make a bright place, you know, dark. It doesn't happen. You can't walk in and make a sunny place dark. Does that make sense? Light is the reality. Darkness is the lack of reality. Right? So improper, sinful action is simply the lack of pious action. So if they stop the sinful and just do the pious, then what's the problem? Right? So it's only when there's the concept of retribution, then we think, no, they did that. They have to suffer for that. But it's no, you have to perform pious activities. That's where you're supposed to be situated. You're doing what you're supposed to, then you stop. Let's say the guy is supposed to be sitting at his desk, and you find him sitting at the water cooler is. So what's the solution to the problem? You know, take him out back, flog him, this and that, hang him upside down, tickle the bottom of his feet, like this. You know, what? No. Go back to the desk.
With the water bottle.
Huh?
The water bottle.
Oh, that's another thing. We're talking piety and impiety, not talking management arrangements. Like that. Does that make sense? So, in other words, the respect for the rules is the main thing, and the avoidance of breaking the rules is the secondary. But if we put them on equal terms, or put the breaking of the rules, that avoidance as higher, then we'll always have a problem with this. Because it's about doing that. So it doesn't mean that it's all right to break, because when you're breaking the rules means you're not following what you should. So that's wrong. But the only solution is doing what you're supposed to do. It's not that you have piety and impiety, and then you have retribution, which, you know, cures all. Is that, yes?
Whereas on the other hand, we hear the mad uncle from
the But what does that have to do with piety or impiety? You understand? It's dealing in devotional service. So we're, because the point of piety, because what we're talking here is moral aspects. Generally speaking, when things go wrong, no one's talking devotional service. They're just talking, you know, something that they themselves would personally, whether they were a devotee or not a devotee, they would consider improper. Right? Does that make sense? So So it's not about what Shastra says. It's not about that. It's about so. Then in here we're talking about the Ishwaras. So one is what, mainly about Krishna, but it's also showing about the great Ishwaras he mentions about, you know, the demigods and like this. So because there we can see there might be a mistake. We might say that is a mistake, but with Krishna it's not a mistake. So we're just pointing out the principle there. So in that, then we're not actually looking at the devotional service. So that's where the mad elephant offense is. Right? So, but that means that you're not respecting devotees. We're supposed to respect the devotees, but we're not respecting the devotees. So that's why it's an offense. Right? Does that make sense? So we have to be able to distinguish between what's knowledge and skills, what's character, and what is devotion. Because we take it that character is automatically devotion. But no, by performing devotion, then character will develop. But it's not that doing something with character is the important focus. It's doing it with devotion, that's the important focus. But then some may say if it doesn't have character, it can't be devotion. But this is a material concept. This is the how the karmis will look at it. You know what I'm saying? That's the mundane vision. And then when it's not based on scripture, then that means it's even it's material and it's atheistic. Because it's not because Shastra says that's why we're doing it. And if you say, no, Shastra says you can't do this, what about all the other things that they allow in the community that Shastra says don't do? You know, oh, we're just being practical, or it's just natural, and you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the difficulty is that that's why it says here, therefore one who's intelligent should carry out their instructions. And then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says the intelligent person will conduct himself in this way. So we're talking about intelligence here. But that's not actually being implied. You know, saying something that they don't like, unless you give a very intelligent explanation, they won't even consider it, and even then they may not accept it. But if it's something that they like, you need no intelligence, no logic to establish it. It's just, of course, they'll use all these nice, you know, platitudes. Oh, it's natural, or it's cultured, or, you know, it's good, or it's, you know, they'll just, whichever is the, how you say, words of the day. Does that make sense? Yeah.
In reference to this particular verse, we saw the example of Brahmaji where, you know, he fell for his daughter.
Yes.
Still, he was not subject to the sinful reaction because he corrected his consciousness.
Yes, because the point is that then they go back to just doing their service. Mm-hmm. Our idea is, no, they can't go back to their service because retribution will purify, devotional service will not purify. So that's the point, is we have an atheistic attachment to non-scriptural, non-devotional activities as that we call, define that as religion because it gives us a result that we like.
He had the body of the twilight.
Mm. He just threw up the body, you see.
And
he corrected his consciousness.
Yeah, they throw that off, that mental body. Mm. But the point is that's all that has to be done and he moves on. Mm. And then we get the fun of appreciating the twilight. Right? You know, I say that's a... Yeah.
One devotee, for example.
One devotee, for example.
No,
okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead. No, I appreciate
because,
it.
Yes,
better to go. Better go to the just the generic rather than... This guy, this. No, what if a devotee... Yeah, better stick with that one.
Because yesterday somebody told me one devotee, he borrowed money from different devotees, a lot of money. Then he disappeared for a few years. Now, yesterday he came back. He want to pick up the devotional service.
Right.
But
picking up the devotional service is fine.
My question
but
is,
the point is what about
give
what
back
about
the money or he just
no he should give back the money.
Of course not.
He took the money. I mean, what did we learn from Shylock?
Right.
You have to give back the money.
So easy, he came back. Then he said, I want to pick up.
Yeah, and over here is there's more of a problem because here they work in kilos, not pounds. Right? No, he has to give back the money.
Yeah.
And he has to be humble, you know, that, yes, it's wrong and this and that, and he'll try to do.
He just came back. He wants to pick up devotional service again. I'm a devotee now.
Yes, that's nice. But the point is what about these other things in the consideration? Because you do have the social structure. Point is he should be engaged in service, but then they should engage him in a way that will be beneficial. You have to see that he has service. It's just a matter of what service. It might be sweeping the road, but like that. Because now they have to pay money for karmis to sweep the road because devotees don't do that anymore. So therefore, then you could save money and then that money can go to pay back the devotees. You know? Like that. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah, with that one guy, it was only Shylock, one guy, right? If you have a whole bunch of guys, I think you'd have to bring the, you'd have to bring in the Mayans to solve that problem. You know? Okay. Okay. How then could the Lord of all created beings, animals, men, and demigods have any connection with the piety and impiety that affect his subject creatures? Right? Because they're all engaged in these activities. So he's not on that platform. He's the one who establishes what they should do and why are all the rules and regulations to elevate you to Krishna consciousness. So therefore, then Krishna and the gopis, they're all absorbed on that transcendental platform. Since the purpose is that, then how is there a transgression? Right? Because the rules that are there are simply so that one will elevate oneself out of the material consciousness. Footnote 35. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 33 to Bhaga Akramichamala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhurima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. Right, so just that position of being able to also remember Krishna like this and absorb like this, then it's the flavor is different. See, it's not just saying he's the supreme, he's this and that. It's talking about his position of interacting with the gopis, but and his position how he's in the transcendental state. Does that make sense? So that's why it's the aspect of sweetness rather than. The second point of he is the, what do you call it? Yeah, he's the Lord, right? He's the Ishwara.
Yeah, because I was thinking that those lines, you know, as being the Ishwara.
Yes, but the point is it just trying to establish his position as trying to show his already position of the Lord of the Gopis? And so in that position, this is how it's working. You can't apply that to him. So in other words, we're discussing their philosophy and showing that it doesn't apply to him. Where we're showing that he's the Ishwara, he's this, he's beyond the modes of nature. Those ones that are applying to him, those will be in that section. This is about how he is beyond that. Okay. So it's a different flavor. That it's rasa. You okay. Material activities never entangle the devotees of the Supreme Lord who are fully satisfied by serving the dust of his lotus feet. Nor do material activities entangle those intelligent sages who have freed themselves from the bondage of all fruit of reactions by the power of yoga. So how could there be any question of bondage for the Lord himself who assumes his transcendental forms according to his own sweet will? So that explains. So these others, the devotees, they take shelter of the Lord and are engaged in His service, and they're freed from the modes of nature. The great sages, through the yoga process and all that, then they've gone beyond this power by meditating upon the Lord's lotus feet. So if they, just by being absorbed in the Lord, then are freed from the control of the modes of nature, why wouldn't Krishna be like that? Because He's the one who gives that. Does that make sense? As like it said before, the sun is purifying a dirty place, but that doesn't mean the sun is impure, because if it is, how can it purify? So, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, he brings his body into the material world by his own will, not under the control of karma like the jivas. Therefore, the Lord sometimes transgresses dharma without faults. An example is defeating Durvasa to give mercy to a special devotee, Ambarish. Right? Because technically, Ambarish is a king, Durvasa is a Brahmin. But he defeated the Brahmin to support the king. Why? Because the king's the devotee and the Brahmin's not. So the devotee is actually the higher position. Like that. Socially, that's another thing of dealing, but you have to understand is why is Varnashram there? It's just to elevate those to the platform of devotional service. And so someone who's already attained that has already attained the perfection of that. So then now we'll work on the devotional rules, not on the rules of religion. Therefore, it appears he's breaking the rule of religion. Is that what he's saying? You know, so many times you see in relation to the devotee, he drives Arjuna's chariot. He's a kshatriya. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, like that. That wouldn't be standard. But he's doing out of affection for his devotee. Is that something? Srila Jiva Goswami writes. We already read. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. Sukadeva Goswami further concludes that the great sages and devotees who are washed clean of all conditional life can move freely even within the contamination of material nature by keeping Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, within their hearts. In this way, they also do not become subject to the laws of pleasure and pain in the modes of material nature. How then is it possible for Krishna, who appears by his own internal potency, to be subjected to the laws of karma? Right? So, we, by surrendering to Krishna, then are not under the modes anymore and come to the transcendental position. And Krishna always works under his internal potency. So why would... Does this make sense? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued, he who lives as the overseeing witness within the gopis and their husbands, and indeed within all embodied living beings, assumes forms in this world to enjoy transcendental pastimes. Footnote 36. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 35 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 20, entitled Devotional Service in Practice, Rasama. Devotional Service in Practice, Rasama Turima, which is in the Prayojana section of the...
No.
What's going on here? Okay, so they got switched. Okay, yeah, I was thinking, wait a minute. Okay, so this is supposed to be, but which one is this supposed to be? Okay, here it is, sadhana bhakti, rasa madhuri, masa madhuri. And then this one is devotional service, sweetness and rasa. So it simply is, this devotional service and practice goes to 37, and the sweetness of rasa goes to 36. Okay. So, he's there, he's within them all, he's going to enjoy his transcendental pastimes. He takes it up to enjoy his pastimes. He's doing all this just to enjoy his pastimes. Yes, he is the Supreme Lord, yes, that is one of his opulences. But we're not talking about that aspect here. We're talking about why he's doing that. He's doing that to enjoy the sweetness of interacting with the living entities. Because the living entities are his devotees. Whether they understand it or not is another thing. Just like, let's say, the child is there and they're behaving themselves. Right? But now there's times when the child doesn't behave themselves. Does that make sense? So... But in that, what is the cause why the parent is still taking care? Because you can say they're not doing their work. Why do you take care? Because yes, out of affection. So therefore, that's the point. Is the sweetness of devotion of the devotional service is that he sees them as devotees. It's just they're not functioning in that way. So as they surrender, then he reciprocates. So we're saying the Uttamadhikari sees everyone as a devotee. Like that, because, and why, how are they on that platform? Because of their remembrance and absorption in Krishna, then why wouldn't Krishna be seeing in that same way? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So he sees all living entities as his parts and parcels. They're his energy. They're Brahman. They're his devotees. But they're just not acting in that capacity. So how they're acting, that way you're dealing. You understand? You know, it's just like, let's say you're playing with a kid. Okay, now if he wants to ride horsey, then who are you? You're the horsey. Okay. You know, other times, then, you know, he's whatever it is, you know, in charge, we're going to do this and that, then, you know, you just do what he says. You know, he wants to play this, that's what you play. So that's the whole point. Because now, in here, everybody's directing their energy at Krishna because that's all there is. And so Krishna therefore reciprocates. So when they don't see him as a person, then he deals with them in that way. However they approach him, that's how he reciprocates. You understand? So there is that point where he sees in this way. So that's why then it is the sweetness of rasa. Because this is how he's seeing. Does that make sense? We have to remember he does have his perspective. And as we bring our perspective in line with his, then that's called, you know, that's what Shastra recommends. That's devotional. That's... Yes? Okay. No? Okay. When the Lord assumes a human-like body to show mercy to his devotees, he engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear about them to be dedicated to him. 37. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur signs verse 36 to Bhagavad Arkamrithimala, chapter 12, entitled entitled Devotional Service and Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Avideya section of the Thakur's book. So this means is that he hearing about those pastimes so that they become dedicated to him. So that's how sadhana bhakti works. Right? So the devotional service and practice means we hear about the pastimes of Krishna, how he takes these human-like forms, how he interacts with the devotees. Hearing about that from our side, then that will create, that then will become dedicated to him. So that's how the process works. Yes?
So we can see from two perspectives. One is he is the Lord and he performs, you know, sweetest pastimes. That is one perspective. And then we can see the person that we love and then he happens to be the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then we can't really have that kind of vision before our relationship is established.
Yes, but the relationship is that of servant. That's the relationship can be established. What aspects of that servantness? That's more of a detail, right? Just like we're saying, Varna Dasa is second, Smarana Dasa is first. So hearing about the Lord, hearing about our relationship, hearing about the position that we're servant of the Lord, that we can accept and appreciate. The devotional process, him as a person, how he interacts with the devotees and all that, we can function from that platform. Then as that matures, then it'll become clear what is our specific relationship. So that of servant, that's generic. So from I could say from Balaram down that side and from Radharani down this side, then it's servant. So only Krishna is the master. So we can say is that's the common thing of all living entities, all Shaktis, is servant of Krishna. So that aspect then we can have and appreciate. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like we can appreciate someone and we don't have a relationship with them. You know, let's say you're in the airport and someone's dealing with someone else in a very nice way, we can appreciate that, but we don't know them. But we can appreciate the principle that's going on. Does that make sense? So that whole position of seeing ourselves as servant, then as servant we appreciate Krishna's position, then that gives the entrance to being able to deal in that area. So,
I'm just thinking is that neutrality is lower than the servantship.
No. The servant or all of that is servant is that mood of servant, because they all see themselves as servant of the Lord. So neutrality means they see themselves as the Lord's servant. It's just there's no sense of possession, so there's no need to actively perform an activity of service. Right? So therefore, it's just the appreciation part. When you I heard mine go off, and then I hear a message going, and it's writing its own messages. Okay. Like that. You know. That's a really smart phone. Right?
Future.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why, but the guy's giving class now. It's like that. You'll have to come back later. No. I made enough noise. He didn't, you know, he didn't care, so. You understand? So it's not that they don't see themselves as servants. It's just not servitor rasa.
Yeah.
It's shanta rasa, but all see themselves as servant of Krishna.
So can we say then that shanta rasa is passive and dasya is active?
Shanta is passive and it's active, yes. Or static and dynamic, yes. Like that, that's all it is. The, what separates this is that sense of possessiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the Shanta Bhaktas then, you know, they'll sometimes be referred to as Atmarama, and that aspect will be brought out to show that position, how they're not connected with the material world.
Mm-hmm.
And other times it'll be brought out their relationship with the Lord and how they're absorbed in the Lord. So you'll see both examples used for these devotees. Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, some ask if Krishna is self-sufficient, why did he at all manifest the pastimes with the gopis, which are disturbing to the so-called moralists of the world? So-called moralists. Right, because the real moralists understand the position of authority and this and that, so they'll have a tendency to not do that. The answer is that such activities show special mercy to the fallen conditioned souls. The gopis are expansions of his internal energy. But because Krishna wanted to exhibit the Rasa Leela, they appeared as ordinary human beings. Right? So, therefore, he displays this, that, like the previous said, he engages in such pastimes as will attract those who hear them, about them, to become dedicated to him. So that's why he performs the pastimes. So it's actually out of his mercy. So that's why he brings them, because otherwise here's, you have that problem is, you know, the so-called moralists will complain. But he's performing them out of mercy for those who can take advantage of the position, and by hearing and chanting about the glories of these pastimes, will be elevated, will be attracted to him. So then they're expansions of his internal potency, but he comes seeming like an ordinary cowherd boy, they appear as ordinary cowherd girls.
It mentions over here that these activities, they show special mercy to the fallen souls.
Yes.
So we also saw that the acharyas, you know, they gave two meanings to the verses. One was to the materialist, and one was to the devotees. So is it that it refers to this?
Does it refer to that they do that? No, it just means that he comes to show his mercy to the living entities. It means if they can only see him on the moralistic platform, then he'll reciprocate on that platform. But as he's come to perform the pastimes so that we can get attracted to his pastimes. We like talking about people that are bigger than us. You know what I'm saying? If that wasn't a common thing, then most of your, you know, modern media would not make money. Right? It's all based on that there's someone who's bigger and you want to know something about them, you know, what do you call it? 10 facts you didn't know about Shah Rukh Khan, you know, stuff like that. I, you know, it's probably, you know, over a million hits on that one, right? No? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that everybody wants to know. So here is the supreme person performing his activities. Everyone wants to know. Right? In fact, if they do a Bhagavat Sapta reading, right, where do they mainly focus? Right? On the Rasa Lila. So, because that's what people want to hear. He says that, yes, we're going to be focusing on the second canto, Purusha Shukta confirmed. You know? Is anybody going to come?
Vacant.
Yes, it'll be vacant. In fact, he won't even be there. So, is that, yes. You know, I didn't pick the topic. You know, so, yeah, yes. So. Yeah. Just imagine the spiritual podcast with other guys, because he's sitting there eating this and that and doing that. Yes. In the material world, pleasure is ultimately manifested in the sex attraction between man and woman, right? So that's the ultimate manifestation. Everything else is just a breakdown of that, right? The man lives simply to be attracted by women, and the woman lives simply to be attracted by men. This is the basic principle of material life. As soon as these attractions are combined, people become more and more implicated in material existence, right? So the guys are going out to see girls that they'll be attracted to. If they go to a place and there's no attractive girls, they'll consider it a waste of time. Right? The girls go out, they're being attractive, but if who's being attracted to them, they don't find attractive, they'll consider it a waste of time. So in other words, this principle of being attracted, that's the whole principle. But it's based on sense gratification. So the whole point is then Krishna gives how we can be attracted to him. In order to show them special favor, Krishna exhibited this Rasa Lila dance. It is just to captivate the conditioned soul. Since they are very much attracted by sex, they can enjoy the same life with Krishna and thus become liberated from the material condition, right? So since they want to hear about, you know, greater people than them, they want to hear about the sexual attraction, then they can hear about how Krishna and the gopis and that attraction. But because that's beyond, it's not material, hearing about that, then one becomes purified of this disease. Right? In the second canto, yeah, they can enjoy the same life with Krishna and thus become liberated from the material condition. In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Maharaj Parikshit also explains that the pastimes and activities of Lord Krishna are medicine for the conditioned souls. They simply hear about Krishna, they become relieved of the material disease. They are addicted to material enjoyment and are accustomed to reading sex literature. But by hearing these transcendental pastimes of Krishna with the gopis, they will be relieved of material contamination. Because this is going on, so therefore then he by his mercy reveals these pastimes, and the living entities hearing about this, then they can be freed from material contamination. Somebody say? Yeah? So that's why he does it. Right. And so therefore the so-called moralists are going to complain anyway. But they complain about it. It's just one of the things they can complain. It's not that they're only complaining about Krishna's pastime. They're complaining always. It doesn't matter if there's something to complain about or not. They'll find something. And then when this comes along, they'll complain about this. Right? So that's that. You can't worry about them, because they're always going to complain. Right? Someone's called a kvetch because that's what they do as a profession. Right? They complain. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. It's not that only when you do something wrong that they complain. No, they always complain anyway. Doesn't matter. You know, they're inside. Oh, it's too stuffy in here. You go out on the porch. Oh, it's too, you know, there's too much air out here. You know? You know, oh, we're hungry, you know, there's nothing to eat. Oh, we can't eat that. That's too oily or greasy. Oh, you know, we could do something without that. What, are you trying to kill us? Are we, you know, are we cows that we only eat salad? You know, like this. So it doesn't matter what you do, they will complain. Does that make sense? So that's why these so-called moralists, because it's so-called, they make up the morality. It's not based on moral principles. We're not talking Chanakya here. That's an actual moralist, because it's based on Shastra. So-called means it's based on their own interpretation of what they like, and their confirmation is if at least one other person agrees with them. As long as they go out, they mention it to their friend, they agree, then everybody like that. Right? You ever heard people say, everybody knows, or everybody thinks like that? Guaranteed, if you go back, it's them and minimum one friend, maybe two or three friends. That's it. There are no more. Right? That's reality. Okay. Sukadev Goswami continued. The cowherd men, bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency, thought their wives had remained home at their sides. Thus they did not harbor any jealous feelings against him. 38. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 37 to Bhagavad Akramichimala, chapter 20, entitled The Sweetness of Rasa, Rasa Madhurima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. See, now having established Krishna's position, you know, fighting off all the so-called morality, then he brings up the point is that, as I think Prabhupada writes here, yes, that the husbands have material bodies. They married the material bodies of their wives. The material bodies of their wives are at home. Like that. But the gopis in their spiritual bodies, they're with Krishna. So those belong to Krishna. So what's the problem if he dances with their spiritual bodies? Because the moralist can only complain about the material body, right? Like that. So that's the thing. So Krishna's by his yoga maya and they're in mahamaya, but yoga maya arranges it, but they're in mahamaya, so then all this goes on. Right. Another important, Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Bhavan. Another important point is that none of the gopis who danced with Krishna were in their material bodies. They danced with Krishna in their spiritual bodies, right? Because before it was, you didn't separate the two. Because they of the considerations that weren't exclusively on Krishna, when they were focused only on Krishna and gave up their material bodies, means now they could go to Krishna in their spiritual bodies, and the material body could stay at home. Yes. We're talking about Gokul. Means you're in the spiritual world, so you're here in your spiritual body or material body. Yes, but the material body is covering the spiritual, right? And so when you come to that platform of full surrender to Krishna, then your material body will be sitting here, and your spiritual body will be off, you know, doing Harinam with Lord Chaitanya or something. You understand? That's why Raghunath Das Goswami, when he is offering his respects to the Brajabasis, then those who are living in Braj and those who are there by meditation. So in other words, you have both of these aspects. You know, we're just trying to get it where we don't identify with the gross body, you know, you know, and kind of appreciate the qualities of the subtle body, you know, and their metaphysical advantage being used in, you know, pious activities to serve Krishna. You know, does that make sense? They danced with Krishna in their spiritual bodies. All their husbands thought that their wives were sleeping by their sides. The so-called husbands of the gopis were already enamored with the influence of the external energy of Krishna. So by dint of this very energy, they could not understand that their wives had gone to dance with Krishna. What then is the basis of accusing Krishna of dancing with others' wives? The bodies of the gopis, which were their husbands, were lying in bed, but the spiritual parts and parcel of Krishna were dancing with him. Krishna is the Supreme Person, the whole spirit, and he danced with the spiritual bodies of the gopis. There is therefore no reason to accuse Krishna in any way. Right? But this point is being made now because we have to get over looking at things on the mundane, moralistic platform. And so therefore it was dealt with in a direct way. Because you see, we had so. If this came up first, we probably wouldn't have said those. Though we might still harbor that kind of a nature. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's dealt, and at the end, it mentions this. So it's just the last point, you know. So you know, like that. But the point is that he's bringing this up on the platform of people who are going to see the religious people, the moralistic people, the sadhakas, you know, the Mayavadis like this, all these. So they may have things to say about this. So to address all those points, he addressed all that. Then at the end, he made the point that in any case, he's just with the spiritual. So what's the problem? Yes.
So here we're not talking about this mentally conceived body. It's actually...
They're Surup, and they're with Krishna and come to that position of being able... So that's Surup Siddhi.
Yeah.
Like that. Right. Does that make sense? And these others, then they'll manifest a form so their husbands are happy. They don't have a material form, but Yogamaya arranges for them. It means the Nitya Siddhas.
So they're in the Vastu
seat. They're in Vastu. Okay. You know, that's there. But these others, it's still Surup. So when that comes to the point where that's the permanent condition, then that'll be Vastu. But before they were in Surup, they had the aspect of Surup in the material body. But then it hadn't come to the point where it was fully absorbed in Krishna. Because, you know what I'm saying? Because
yeah.
It's presented by where we're getting the information, which generally means through the percolating through the, what do you call it? You know, the channels connected more with the Sahajiya kind of, you know, that kind of thing, is that what is your spiritual form, that's Surup. And that one can function with that, that's still Surup. It's only when that Surup comes to the point of actually having this proper attitude and dealing with Krishna, then it's called Surup Siddhi. Right? So you can see as these girls, then they're able to then engage in the Rasa dance with Krishna without getting distracted by all these other things that they were distracted before, their pride, their envy, their all these different things. Then that would be Surup Siddhi. Right? So it's actually much higher. That's why the principle is sahajya means to make it easy, to make it cheap. So they take something of a higher and bring it down to a lower. So, you know, they'll make the Shravana Dasa, the first point is the Surup. But actually that's the second point. First is the mood, then the Surup. Because the Brahma Samhita says, Yakarna Narna Vajale Bhajatisma Yoga. Nidrama, not that one. That's a wrong verse. Yam kama krodha sahaja pranayadi bhiti vatsalya moha guru gaurava sevya bhavai. So they have that mood, then they have a form that matches that mood. So you first have to have the mood. So unless you have the braja mood, then you can't manifest a form. So already there, they've got that out of place. Then they will say that out of place thing of the, you know, is the number one point. Instead of the second stage, that in the first stage, that's Surup Siddhi. When it's not, Surup Siddhi is actually attained once you come to the point of perfect meditation. So it's actually Apan Das, that's Surup Siddhi. And then, what do you call it? Sampati Das. That is Vastu Siddhi. So they just move everything down, and then it's not a matter of you have to be stable in devotional service, and it has to be pure devotional service. No, it's just that I think about the gopis how I like, and I get bob from that, and that's for them as, you know, as good as that anything, as good as it gets. But that's why they're called sahajis. Because they don't care for shastra, they don't care for the authority of the acharyas, you know. So that's what makes them sahajis. I mean, that's their philosophy. It's not that we're calling them that. That's actually their name, and that's their philosophy.
Surup
Siddhi and Siddha Surup. In Sanskrit, if you turn a word this way or that way, it means two different things. By adjusting the placement of the word, does it make a difference really in the meaning?
It is not making a difference.
Yes, so then? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When we say that sahajis, they move everything down to Sramana Dasa. I mean, it's still really in the Vedic position.
Yeah, and then where do they apply that? down on the Prakriti Bhakta level.
So, what's Ramana Dasa are they talking about?
That's the thing. We're still trying to figure it out. You know, it's like the guy who comes along with the fabulous business plan, but he can't even get, you know, rub two sticks together to get a spark, you know, and he's talking, yeah, this, that, and all that, you know, this, that, that's what we're talking about. Yes.
I'm just trying to clarify everything, because you mentioned several times that, you know, in Vrindavan, with their own body or by meditation.
Yes.
So it seems to be we're going through three levels, or some goes through three levels, while, you know, being present here in meditation.
Right.
I think they call it the Siddha Deha.
Yes.
That is the body.
Yes, that's Siddha Deha, but it's not Sarup Siddhi.
No.
Yeah.
That is the first one.
Yes.
While still living in this same body and then meditating in there.
Yes.
Then the next verse in Gokul, that's Siddha Swarup.
No, that's still in your that's just your form. That's your Swarup. Because that Swarup only becomes Siddha when it's... It's just like I have a pot. In the pot is water. The water is boiling. I drop in some potatoes. Are they Siddha?
No.
I have to wait 20 minutes. So that's the point. Just because it's a spiritual form doesn't mean that it's Siddha. Siddha means cooked. It means paka, you know, it's ready.
So Purvaraga would be...
Purvaraga is where, that's where that comes. But it's only when they interact with Krishna it seems that that comes to that point. Yes, because it naturally comes to that position. That you've come to the point of being able to function within any stage of bhava, that's by Krishna. That's by invitation only. By following the instruction that's given here, using the intelligence, then one can, by one's effort, you know, it's by Krishna's mercy, of course, but it's through the efforts that you got yourself from Shraddha up to Asakti. But to get from Asakti to bhava, that's by invitation. So, by the mercy of Krishna, by the mercy of the devotee, by the mercy of the associate of the Lord, like this, then that comes there. It's not that I'm going to do that. Otherwise, if that was the case, then, you know, half of Bengal and you know, three quarters of Vrindavan would already be in the spiritual world, you know, internally. Externally, yes, but internally, not necessarily so much.
Because that point of developing your mentally conceived body, some devotees say you must go through that stage. Or some say, if you remember Krishna at the time of Vyasa, you're developing then.
Yeah, that's the whole point. It's just a matter of, you can't say when that develops. You know what I'm saying? You can't say, it just happens. So therefore, if it happens in the Madhyama platform, fine. If it doesn't, it will happen after one gets to when takes birth in Vrindavan. The point is at the time of death you remember Krishna, you get there. Otherwise, Bharat Maharaj is on that position, right? He's an Uttamadhikari, so what does that place him? And at the time of death he remembered a deer. And where did he end up? In Braj as a deer? No. You know. Like that. So the whole point is you take birth in Braj because of remembering Krishna at the time of death. It doesn't matter what your position. So a neophyte remembering Krishna at the time of death will take birth in Braj. They're purified, but at the same time as their development of devotion is only how much it was when they died. Right? But now having no material conditioning as such, there'll be the fragrance of it, that then they can very quickly, we see, come to the platform of prema. You know, especially if they are, you know, more focused, so they get the association of the Lord's associates. Then very quickly it will come to that point of that Purva Rag. Right? Then they can take part in the pastimes. Because until you come to Purva Rag, you can't take part in the pastimes. So that means before that, you're hanging out with the other Brajabasis there. And the point is that if you're serious, then you'll hang out with the eternal associates of Krishna Brajabasis. Otherwise, you know, they're hanging out with their husbands here, but they got material bodies and material consciousness. You know, the wives of the yagyic Brahmins, they're... This is the meaning of tatasta. So, in other words, the reality is, we remember Krishna, it all works. We don't remember Krishna, it doesn't work. So it's not that we have to develop that body. No, the body's already there. You have to be qualified to use it. You know? Does the five-year-old say, yes, I have to develop the whole concept of the, you know, this economic empire that I'm going to inherit? No, it's already there. You just have to be qualified. So if it happens to come up in a lower position, fine. But it means if you're a madhyama, it's only an indication, as Lord Brahma said. But if you got to the uttam platform while within this body, then you can function on that. You understand? So that's the point. Because until there's anartha nivriti, you can't actually understand things like that. Because there's too much distraction. But the real point of anartha nivriti that Rupa Goswami's meaning is freed from the material body. So when you've come to the Uttama platform, that Bhava platform, that's the anartha nivriti that Rupa Goswami's talking about. You know, we like to interpret it that it's farther down because then, hey, you know, but it's not actually. So it's only an indication. But at that point, then one has the form, then one can perform those activities. Does that make sense? So then it's just a matter. You get to the Uttam platform, then you're on the Uttam platform while within this body, then yes, you would be performing these activities mentally. But if you haven't gotten to the Uttam platform, then you're Kanishtha or Madhyama and you're performing the activities as goes on here, the sadhana bhakti. And even if one is on that Uttama platform, one externally is going to follow sadhana bhakti. In fact, you'll be even more careful to follow it nicely. So, is that okay? That kind of puts it in perspective. So it's a practical thing on how we can be absorbed in Krishna, but we have to know it's not sentimental. It's actually a science and it actually works in this way. But it's not based on our knowledge. It's based on our surrender to Krishna. Does that make sense? The sciences are used to serve Krishna, but it's not because of knowledge of the sciences that you attain that position. Because Krishna says, as you surrender, then he reciprocates. So you surrender to knowledge, then you'll get, Krishna will reciprocate his knowledge. But only when you surrender in devotion does he reciprocate on that platform of devotion. That's why you can see as a devotee could develop very nice materially, but not necessarily spiritually or devotionally. Because where they're surrendering is there. But now if they engage that material knowledge and position nicely in Krishna's service, then the other part will catch up very easily. You understand? So that's why we're making the point that this idea is that, oh, if we become better managers and organizers, then Krishna consciousness will be better. No, it has nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. You may have a nicer thing to engage in Krishna's service. You know, just like someone's not a great cook, but they have nice devotion, it's still devotional, it's still prasad. And someone else can be a fabulous cook but have total attitude, and Krishna won't even eat it. You know, so it's not that the technique is the definitive form. So, it's to find that the neophytes may look at it that way, right? But the madhyamas and uttamas never look at it that way. It's the surrender and devotion. Does that make sense? So therefore, if we have that devotion, then that's how one gets to that uttama platform. And it's recommended that you study the scriptures, you contemplate them, you understand, and then Krishna reveals, and then that knowledge is there also. So, okay. What do you?
But in the morning, when we saw Krishna's smiling face, he just felt so wonderful. You know, so it was like there was this reciprocation from Krishna. But as far as I was concerned, I was following the instructions of authority.
Yeah, but why were you following the instructions of authority?
Because I trusted them.
And why would you want to trust them and not, you know... That's right. Yeah, it's good you came up with that because I couldn't remember the name properly. So. What is it? Yehudi. What's the rest of it? Okay. Yeah? Okay. Good. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Oh, it's Srila Prabhupada ki. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki. Jayanti Gaura Premanandi.